Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and happy Friday the 13th. This is Mac and you're listening to Mac's Musings. My guest tonight is Ron Ford and should be dialing.
Hello.
Hello, Ron. This is Mac.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay, and you can hear me all right, I take it?
Yeah.
Okay, and I can hear you all right, so that's good. That means we're on the air. Doesn't always happen that way, so we're
I'm ahead already. Great.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, great, we're ahead already.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm just going to jump in. When did you realize that you wanted to get into filmmaking?
I don't even remember. I was very young, as long as I can remember. I was always obsessed with films and stories. And my earliest ambition I remember is wanting to be a special effects makeup artist before there was such a thing. I wanted to make monsters. And then later on, I kind of learned that the director was the guy who calls the shots in a film, and I decided that's where I wanted to be.
So is that your favorite thing to do out of all the different jobs you've done, is director or writer or what?
Well, on film, I think the most satisfying thing is directing. But I also usually write all my scripts, too. On stage, I do a lot of theater as well. I'm more comfortable acting. I don't like directing plays. I've done it a couple times, and it doesn't have the same satisfaction for me. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So which do you enjoy more, doing films or doing theater, or is it like the same, or?
Well, I love both, but I want to be on the stage in theater, and I want to be behind the camera in film, although I do plenty of camera acting, too. Gotten better at it over the years, I think.
I see what you're saying, because you probably have less control as a director on the stage. Is that
it's
how
not
you
even
see
that.
It?
You got... No, it's a different process, and it's all working with actors, you know, and I don't know, I'm not as comfortable doing that as because I see everything in angles and images. I grew up on movies and television, and that's the way my brain works. It's the most satisfying thing. Writing, on the other hand, I've always gotten a lot of attention from my writing, and. So I've written most of my scripts, and one thing I was never able to get together was I've tried writing novels all my life and never got one to work. But this year I've written two, and I think that's very satisfying, especially when I see the cover, which I haven't yet. It's coming out in April, but that's extremely satisfying. I think that's kind of the direction I'm gonna head most. I'm getting too old for this micro-budget filmmaking. It's a lot of work, and wearing too many hats at the same time. And I don't know how many more I'm able to do. I'm getting up there in years. Probably stick more to acting and writing.
Right. Yeah, I can understand that. I didn't mean to interrupt you. There's like an overlap, and I can't always tell if the person's still talking. But all I was going to say was the COVID doesn't help either with trying to make films.
No, although I've made a couple during this. I've done some animated films that I made on my own, and we just finished shooting one last week, and the acting work is almost disappeared. I did one commercial this year, and that's it. I was had the lead in a play, the biggest theater in town, just before it all struck. We were about to open 2 weeks before they closed us down for COVID. So. That was pretty frustrating, but it's been great for the writing. I've been home so much, and everything just kind of clicked, and I've been writing like a fiend, and got the, like I say, a novel coming out in April, and I've written another collection of short stories and a novella that I've sent to the same publisher. We'll see if they accept those or not. And I'm working on the third novel now.
Oh, wow. Well, so we'll get back to those in a little bit. I mean, if you don't mind doing it that way.
No, not at all.
Okay. Because I like to try to tie things in, so I'm going to tie it in with one of your movies, at least one of the novels anyway. But I'm going to start with your first, at least on IMDb, your first credit was as an actor on The Young Writers in 1986. So tell us about that, what if you remember anything. Not everybody remembers
that was,
everything they do.
Well, I remember it vividly. I lived in Tucson, Arizona at the time, and there are two standing Western movie towns in Tucson or near Tucson. This is an ABC series that just was shooting at what they called Old Mescal, a little Western town that in just outside of Tucson. That's kind of the more rustic of the two. Old Tucson is a lot more slick. Let's see, it starred with Stephen Baldwin and can't think of the guy's name. Favorite, very hot actor right now. Great actor. Josh Brolin starred in it. And I was an extra on it a lot. And then there was one episode they pulled me aside and asked me to play one of these three gunslingers that were in jail. Didn't have any lines, but we got to interact with all the other actors. And it was a lot of fun working on that show. I met a lot of famous character actors. And I like Westerns a lot, so it was fun hanging out in Western clothes all day.
Hmm. Yeah, I like Westerns too. Not all, obviously, but I for the most part, I like them.
No, I like good Westerns. I don't like bad ones.
Obviously, yeah. In 1996, you did Alien Force, and that you were acting, producing, writing, and directing that one. So tell us about that.
Well, that was my first, my directorial debut, as they say. I had worked for Wildcat Entertainment. They made a film called Blazing Force with this Australian kickboxer, Tyrone Wade. And it was too short, so Mark Gordon, who ran the company, he hired me to flesh out the script and to write some new scenes to expand the movie. And that went over so well, then I told him I wanted to direct the next one. And we're doing another movie with Tyrone Wade. So to tie the pictures together, I had Force in the title. You know, that's the only connection with the two, as they both have the word Force in the title. But it's a... he wanted a karate movie. I wanted a science fiction, so we made a hybrid of the two. It's a kind of a comedy science fiction film with a whole lot of pretty good karate in it, if you're into that.
I don't know about any of the listeners. I like it sometimes, but it just depends. But
yeah,
I
let me tell
like
you,
it.
I'm not a fan. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, it's your show. You talk when you want. All I was going to say was, I like it when it's an alien movie, so you did a good thing putting them together.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too. I'm not really big on karate films. My brother was really into it. He's a black belt, and he used to pick on me a lot with that. So I kind of had a prejudice against karate, but that's what the producer wanted. And so I figured it's not going to... No one's gonna take it seriously, so we made it. So I made it pretty funny too. I like the movie a lot. It was a pretty sweet one for a directorial debut. And Joe Bob Briggs reviewed it very comically and made some good points. You can't find it anymore. It was only released on VHS, but it's a good little picture. Says me.
Yeah, I don't recall ever seeing that. Of course, if it wasn't widely available somewhere on like VHS or something, you know, way back in '96, it would have been. It may have been available on VHS, but
yeah,
because those things are kind of hard to find sometimes. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they wanted a TVQ actor in it, too, so I got a hold of Burt Ward. We asked a whole bunch of people, but Burt Ward was the one who agreed. And so I did a wraparound thing where we could shoot it in just a couple hours, where he plays the boss alien, kind of, who sends this guy off on his mission. Supposedly there's a he's this kind of wimpy, nerdy alien guy with tape on his glasses, and so the mighty Praxima, who is Burt Ward, Robin from Batman, if you don't know, he gives him a muscly body and turns him into Australian kickboxer Tyrone Wade, who goes to Earth and kicks some butt.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I actually like Burt Ward, so that's another reason for me to try to find it.
He's a nice guy. You won't find it unless you can get an old VHS.
Well,
I would love to see
those
things.
Yeah, I still have my VHS, and I still use it. So if I can find one, I'll buy it.
I would sure love to see those Wildcat movies put out on DVD so they're preserved more for the future. That one and Mark of Dracula are two films I directed for Wildcat Entertainment, and also an action picture called Riddled with Bullets. And they were all only ever out on VHS.
Aww. Well, actually, the Mark of Dracula was the next one I was going to bring up, because that's another one that you were actor, writer, and director. So since you already mentioned it, you might as well go ahead and tell us about it.
Well, it was my second film as a director for the same company. The producers said, let's do some public domain character instead of having a known actor as our selling point. And it was the 200th anniversary. Is it 100? No, the 100th anniversary of Dracula, the novel. That year is 1997. The book came out in 1897. So that's why I chose Dracula. Plus, I've always been a big Dracula fan. It was a fun movie. I kind of stole the plot from Dracula Has Risen from the Grave. The producer wanted us to use cloning to bring Dracula back. It was a very silly scene at the end, the opening where they cloned Dracula. I would have rather gone a more traditional route. But then the plot basically follows Dracula, Prince of Darkness from Hammer. It's kind of my homage to those films, done on a budget. And it was a pretty fun little movie.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like a nice one. Because I like that when people make them where they're not, they're homages. I like spoofs too. Don't get me wrong. I like spoofs too. But I like the ones that are more of homages and not spoofs when it comes to Dracula.
Although, I'd say that's what this is. I didn't try for any humor in it, or not much anyway.
Although I did like that. I have liked quite a few, not quite a few, a couple Dracula comedy ones. So, but they have to be really good in order for me to like them, because I'm hard to get to laugh.
I can't think of any that worked for me except for Fearless Vampire Killers. I think it's a pretty great movie.
Well, the one that Leslie Nielsen was in, I like that one.
Yeah, Mel Brooks is what was it? Old Dracula? No, it was Dracula, Dead and Loving It.
Yeah, Dead and Loving It, yeah.
It had its moments, but it's not on the same level as Young Frankenstein.
Well, no. There's no way of comparing the two. But it was funny. Because if I laugh out loud, actually, I said it the wrong way. I'm easy to make laugh. So if I don't laugh at something that's supposed to be a comedy, there's something wrong with it, because I'm real easy to make laugh. And usually I don't laugh at the Dracula ones that are supposed to be funny, but I did laugh a couple of times during that Dead and Loving It. So that's why I mentioned that one.
Yeah, well, it's Mel Brooks. He's always, even in his worst films, has got moments.
Right. I agree. Now, in 2000, this is where we're going to have a tie-in in just a couple minutes. You again were actor, writer, director, producer of Hollywood Mortuary. Now, that's one that I've seen. And I really, really like that. So
yeah, it's been released a couple times.
Yeah, I want you to discuss the film, and then here comes the tie-in for the listeners, that this is the novel that Ron was talking about a little while ago. Well, the one novel that he was talking about. So talk about the movie and then how you were asked to novelize it and then, you know, how you did it over the summer in quarantine and so on and so forth. So,
okay. Well, Holly of Mortuary is probably my signature film. It's the one everybody knows me for. It's got a long history. You ready for this? I wrote a script back in the 80s called The Grave Robbers. And it was about, I took the kind of the structure, the idea behind My Favorite Year, but I made it about Bela Lugosi and Ed Wood instead of Errol Flynn and Mel Brooks. And so it was a good script. It won a contest, Christopher Columbus Society, which would not be a popular name now for a contest. But anyway, I won that, and this script got sent around Hollywood, and a lot. Sidney Pollack really liked it. He sat on it for a while, but then this movie called Matinee, Joe Dante's film, came out, and they deemed it was too close to that, and that movie was a great movie, but it was a box office flop, so they passed on it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, when I got the chance to make Kevin Lindemuth, you know Kevin Lindemuth, he's in Michigan now. At the time, he was a New York filmmaker who was making microbudget thing, did the Addicted to Murder series, and he was doing another anthology. Yeah, he's doing another anthology series called Creature Realm, and he wanted short horror films. So I made Hollywood Mortuary for that, a short film. Excuse me. And I always took some of the characters from my previous script, The Grave Robbers, which I couldn't afford to shoot as a period piece. So I kind of did a not really a shortened version of it, but it has some of the characters in it and some of the same incidences. And then, so that was released in Creature Realm, and I really dug the story. So a year after it was released, I got Kevin's permission to re-release it, and we went back and shot new scenes and turned it into a feature, reshot some things and added new stuff. And that became, something of a micro-budget hit. We sold lots and lots of copies of it. And so anyway, that's the movie I'm known for. If you see the DVD release from Dead Alive Productions, there's a hand coming out of the grave on the cover. That's the hand of David Hayes, who worked for that company then. Now he works for Source Point Press. He's an editor, and he asked me over the years, he's asked me a couple times to do a novelization of Hollywood Mortuary. And this summer was the summer of quarantine, so I sat down and I did it. It appears from the movie quite a bit. It's kind of a reimagining of it, and I'm really happy with it. They were too. So that's coming out in April. I'm dying to see what they come up with for a cover.
Wow.
So that's the lengthy history of Hollywood Mortuary.
Yeah, I really like that movie. So I would assume that I would like the novel, unless you like totally go off completely different from what the movie was, but
no.
That's not what you just said. So
no, not completely. There's a lot of different things happen a lot differently in it, but it's basically the same story. My dogs are going nuts.
Aww. Poor little babies. They want attention.
Yeah, well, they're not so little.
Well, I call all animals babies. They're all babies.
Well, me and my girlfriend, we love animals. We have 7 cats and 2 dogs. We combined my cats in when I moved in here, and so we got 7 cats now and her 2 dogs.
Aww.
We love them all.
I have 1 cat now. I had 2, but 1 died last year, and he was old, not old, 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 because I had a cat that lived to be almost 22 years old. In fact, she died like a month before her 22nd birthday, but he was 16 when he died. And then his quote-unquote brother, they're not, Well, yeah, yeah. His quote-unquote brother, they're not really brothers. They're, you know, adoptive brothers.
Right.
But he's still around and kicking, and, you know, he's 17. So he's up there. And the sad part was is he was the one that was diagnosed with early kidney problems. This was, you know, like over a year ago. And so I was expecting, you know, him to go. And then the other one went, and just for no reason, because there was they did a bunch of tests when he first started getting bad, and they couldn't find anything wrong with him. It was very, very odd. Well, sorry about that. I don't mean to take up your time on your show.
I'm sorry to hear that. It's always heartbreaking when you lose him.
It is. It is. And especially with something like that, where it's like, what? There's nothing there, but yet.
Yeah.
So moving on. Don't want to be sad on your show.
Okay.
Witchcraft 11, Sisters in Blood. You did that one. You were actor, director, and writer. And, of course, it's
yeah.
One in a big conglomerate of witchcraft movies. So tell us about that one that you worked on.
It is the longest running series in genre films, I believe. A guy named Jerry Pfeiffer runs Vista Street Entertainment. And I'd worked for him before and talked to him many times about doing stuff. And he had this project from Korean investors called Turburator, which was a ripoff of Terminator, a sex version of Terminator, and they were going to use actual sex scenes from Terminator, which, you know, not going to worry about copyright issues over there. So anyway, Jerry had very little money. He said there's going to be an impossible job, and we need to get women on the set, new women, pretty much every day. And he said, I told him I wanted to do witchcraft. I said, if I do this job, I pull it off, I want to do Witchcraft 11, and I want to do it on film, because I had never done a movie shot on film before. And Witchcraft 11 was, you know, Witchcraft was a series that everybody knew, so you know, I wanted to have my name on one of them. And so I did it. I did this Turburator thing. It was a big mess. I didn't even use my name on it because of some of the things in the script are so ugly. Like, and one character rapes a woman, and then she comes back to him asking for more. And I just said, I can't do that. So I used a different name. But I did the job. Jerry was happy, and I got the job to do Witchcraft 11. I don't know if you've seen many of those movies, but they really have very little in common with each other, except sometimes they have a recurring character of Lutzen Garner, the cops, and Will Spann, who's a warlock. But they're played by different people often and completely different characters from movie to movie. So
I've seen most of them.
Yeah. So I'm good friends with Stephanie Beaton. She's in a lot of my stuff, and she always played Detective Lutz, or in a lot of them she did, and her partner was McCool Robbins. They're both people that I liked and worked with before. So those guys were in, and he wanted Will Spanner in it, and a whole different guy playing him. But most of those witchcraft movies aren't even about witches, they're vampire movies and stuff like that. Well, I wanted to go back to the roots and make a true witchcraft movie. So I set it in a college and had an evil drama professor who was producing Macbeth, and the girls he casts as the witches in Macbeth, he uses them as vessels for these three witches who were hanged in the same property hundreds of years ago and are buried there. So their souls enter these girls, and they, you know, horror ensues. I thought it was a pretty good film. You know, it's a formula thing. You had to have what Jerry called love scenes every 15 minutes. So that got annoying, having to deal with that. And it just kills your plot pace. But that's, you know, that was the formula. So I did that. But much less relying on sex than most of those witchcraft movies, and more of a horror film. It's probably the goriest of the witchcraft films, too. Which Jerry wasn't keen about, but got away with it.
Yeah, sometimes you need a little gore.
Yeah, I like it for its own, not if it's for its own sake, but you know, I don't shy away from it when it's part of the story either.
Well, yeah, well, like I said to another guest that was on, it's not that I can't stand gore, because, well, for one thing, I'm a nurse. I've actually seen real guts hanging out of people, so because I worked in a for a while, I worked in an ER, so I've seen just about anything that you could see in a movie, only real. So it doesn't bother me. However, if you're just putting that in there for the sake of having it there, same thing with nudity. If you're just putting nudity in there for the sake of having somebody naked, well, then you don't have a very good movie if you're relying on that.
Yeah.
But now,
yeah. Well, I mean, I was forced into that with.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm saying I was forced into that with witchcraft as part of the formula. I tried to justify
right.
it story wise as much as I could, but you know, I'm not a big fan of gore porn either. I don't even like the Friday the 13th movies. I just, you know, they're just such a simplistic morality. Anytime someone has sex, they get chopped up, and that's what the movie is: a series of
Right.
Yeah. Chopped up.
I
just don't like those movies. They're not interesting to me.
Yeah, I don't like gore porn either. So, yeah, I know exactly where you're coming from. I was telling somebody about, you know, my take on it is, hey, if it's part of the movie and it makes sense to the movie, that's one thing. Like, you know, the nudity or the gore, if it makes sense
mm-hmm.
to the movie.
Because, sure.
Now, Psycho, okay, she was killed in the shower, so it makes sense that she was in the shower. But if you
right.
just have somebody getting in a shower just to see them naked in a shower and show them soaping up and everything, and because I've seen movies like this, not that I wanted to
lots
see them,
of
it's like, you know, yeah. There's lots of them, and you just see people soaping up in the shower. They soap up for like 10, 20 minutes, and then that's it. Then they get out of the shower, and they go about their business, and then whatever else the movie is about. And I'm like, what? Why did they even have that in there?
You know why. Because that's the elements they're selling. But
well, it makes no sense.
No.
To me, it doesn't make a good – I mean, yes, on one hand, I kind of understand it. But having friends as filmmakers, I've gotten into this with some of the male filmmakers. And one was complaining to me, well, I don't have a big audience for my films. And it's always the young boys that want to watch my films. And I said, well, did you ever stop to think that it's because all you ever show is naked women? Maybe if you showed a few naked men, you could have a bigger audience. If you're going to have nudity, it needs to be fair. Women.
I agree with that.
Heterosexual women do not like looking at naked women. We don't care if we see them or not. It's like, well, who cares? I mean, so there's a naked woman there. Well, who cares? But we don't like looking at that. If we want to see anything naked, if we want it to be a man, we don't want to see a naked woman.
Yeah. Yeah, especially
so
American films.
You're not
I mean,
using the woman audience. And the funny thing is, his very next film, he had the female nudity, which is fine, but then he also had male nudity too, and completely nude, you know, full frontal. And mm-hmm. that movie was his most popular movie that he ever made.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I totally agree with that. I think, especially in America, you see more penises in European films than you do in American ones, and it's like a taboo. You'll see lots of naked women, but they'll always, you know, be real demure with the shots of the males. It annoys me too. You're right.
My brother, he's kind of funny. He says, oh, you just want to see naked men all the time. And I said, oh, please, if that's all I wanted, I could just go on the internet and look in porn. I'm talking about if it's in a movie, then it's – especially if there's two people or in this one movie that I used the other day talking to somebody on the show. There was one with Vin Diesel, and it was one of the Pitch Black movies. I think it was the last one. But he's in bed with three women, which is fine. You know, they're in bed, so they're all naked. That's expected. They're in bed. But he gets out of bed, and he's completely clothed. Completely. He has on his pants, and he has on a T-shirt. I mean, he didn't even, like, you know, have his shirt off. If he would have been in his underwear, at least, like, you know, tighty-whities or boxers, you know, either one, that would have been more believable that he just got out of bed with having sex with three women than with him having all of his clothes on. So I like things to make sense. And I really don't like it when they don't make sense. And that goes with everything, not just nudity.
I wonder what kind of underwear Riddick would wear, though. I doubt if he goes to JCPenney. you know, it would cost him a fortune to show Vin Diesel full frontal naked, or, you know, maybe he wouldn't even do it, but he's a big star, so that would cost a lot of money, and that's probably the main reason why.
Well, yeah, but see, that's the thing, though. Then they shouldn't have shown him get out of bed, or they could have done it like what they do on TV, where they pull the covers over him when they go to get out of bed. But
frame him above his waist, you know, just see his chest and back.
Yeah, really. I mean, after all, a lot of people missed this because they weren't looking for it. And granted, the first time I wasn't looking for it, but the second time I saw the movie, I was. And I mentioned it because of your other movie that you were just talking about. But the original Terminator, when Arnold Schwarzenegger is walking up to those three punks, and he's naked, he's swinging in the wind. You can see that. And that's why women like that movie, because it's like, wow, it was almost unheard of at that time to see full frontal nudity, especially at big star.
We did the same thing in our Terminator ripoff with the the Korean investors, except it was all dorsal. It was all to be shot from behind, but he was butt naked when he appeared, too.
I'm sorry. Anyway, getting back to movies. The Crawling Brain, you wrote, directed, and produced that. Tell us about that one.
What's the greatest motion picture ever made?
The Crawling Brain.
It's it's a title I've had in my head for a long time. Originally, I had, it was going to be my ultimate parody of or homage to 50 science fiction movies. And the original idea I had, the mad scientist who was going to be played by Tim Sullivan, he was going to burst into a song at one point, do a rock and roll number like they do in some really cheesy 50s movies. But anyway, I was working with this producer who loved Hollywood Mortuary. And he wanted me, he said he'd throw money at me if I make another movie using Randall Malone and, you know, some of the cast members from Hollywood Mortuary and that I wrote and direct. And we did a picture called Dead Season, which was a title that he had in his head. And that's probably one of my favorite movies of that period. And then he wanted to make another one. And I said, well, here's the title been in my head for a while. It's The Crawling Brain. And so we proceeded to make it. It's one of my favorite movies that I've done because it came out pretty close to what I saw in my head. It's definitely an homage to the 50s stuff. We got a evil Nazi brain who controls people and every once in a while has to get out of its tank and go slithering around like a snake to feed. Let's see, what else? Well, I was able to license Ronald Stein music from old 50s, old Roger Corman 50s movies like Attack of the Crab Monster and stuff like that. So that's the score of the movie. So it sounds like a 50s film. And we had some nudity and gore in that too, because I figured if those guys, if Corman and those people could have done that in the 50s, they would have, because they were exploitation films. But I think all the nudity makes sense in that film, and the gore stuff is so over the top, it's fun. It's a very entertaining movie. I think it's more tongue-in-cheek than scary, but I don't know, some people might find it scary. I had a great special effects guy, Chris Bergschneider, who I worked with in Tucson on a couple movies, and he agreed to to do the effects on my film. I just love the movie. It's actually one that has come out on DVD recently in the last few years. A guy named Joe Pinkerton has Blood Banquet Studios, and he released it a couple of years ago, finally. Fred Olen Ray was interested in it for a while, but the man who financed it, he married this woman, and she had some wild kids and went through all this crap, and he said he could never find the master tape for it, so bigger distributors weren't interested in it since we didn't have a digital master to work from. But Joe was willing to take it the way it was, and he came out looking pretty good. So finally the world can see that.
Yeah, good. Well, I love things like that, too. Like what I said earlier, where they're homages, and even if it's a little bit funny here and there, because you can have funny parts in it, but not have it be a comedy. So, I
think a lot of people might consider it a comedy, and I don't mind that at all.
I like those too.
Tongue way in cheek.
Oh, I definitely like those too. The flat out comedy all the way. I like those too. I've seen a lot of those, and I like those. Like Eight-Legged Freaks. I mean, I really love the movie. I mean, obviously that was a comedy. Now, I'm going to skip ahead from some of these that I have on here because I want to make sure that we get to the newer ones. And you just had two different ones released, and the one of them is Monster History 101. So tell us about that one first.
Well, that was Tony Masciola at SOVHorror.com. He asked me if I had anything that he might be interested in releasing, and I said, well, I have a lot of short films that I'd love to find a home for. So we decided to make an anthology out of them, and I needed some way to string it together. So since all of them are set in different periods of history, I said we'd do Monster History 101 with myself as a weird professor, Matt Cobb, the leading authority on monsterology. And, you know, it's quarantine time, so I shot it all myself. I have a room here at the house where I have all my monster memorabilia. So I showed off some of that stuff for the title sequence, and then that was the room where I shot my wraparound stuff, which is just introducing each film and telling what fear the monster in it represents. And I did that as over-the-top, kind of an Einstein impression. Just as I did it all by myself, set the camera on the tripod and push play and sat down in front of it and then did my spiels. But it contains some of my favorite short films that I've made over the last few years. It's mainly what I've been doing. Last feature I made was the Kiki long time ago for Fred Olen Ray. So it's got, it opens up with A Thorn in Paradise, which was a medieval set film, which has a stop-motion monster in it. We made that for the Demon Chaser Festival and won the Ray Harryhausen Memorial Award because of the stop-motion creature in it.
Cool.
Basically about a couple nights ago on a quest to cut down the Tree of Knowledge daughter who's been kidnapped. And anyway, then the next one is... what is the next one? Oh, The Plat Eye was an animated film. I do cartoons once in a while. Very crude. I use a whiteboard and dry erase markers. And this was the most ambitious one of those. It was a story based on the real slave superstitions about a plat eye is a slave that the master kills and buries. And it comes from the grave and protects his gold, which is also buried nearby. And then we have my one Western, Man Without a Saddle, which was a pretty ambitious little film. It's the werewolf Western based on a Kipling story called Mark of the Beast. Story I'd already adapted for Dead Time Tales as a gangster story, but this one it's set in, the story's set in India, and I transpose it to the Western America because the story works just fine. The indigenous people who curse him would be Native Americans instead of the Indian caste people. You want to go through every one of them? I think the next film was Dr. Jekyll and Love, which is also a short story in my short story collection. And that's a parody of the repressed sexuality of Victorian England. Jekyll's trying to have date night with his wife, and she's not having any of it. So he needs it. So he uses Mr. Hyde to go and get some.
That's funny.
I'm in this specific order. There's also another animated film in there, Ron Ford's Nightmare, circa 1966, which is very short, but it's a nightmare I had when I was a kid that was really, that I've never forgotten. It's kind of informed a lot of my life. It was when I was first realizing, you know, that I was mortal, that everybody dies, and that's what it's about. Is about a child's idea of mortality. Everybody gets on a bus and they all start crumbling and dying, including Batman and Robin. There's another one, the Big Throbbing Thing was another one for the Demon Chaser Festival. It's full of double entendres, that the guy on a motorcycle picks up a woman, takes her to his house, and turns out she's a serial killer. But even worse, he's got a monster in the basement that controls him, and which eventually eats her. It's a very suggestive looking creature. It's the thing stuck on a wall, and it's phallic and also vaginal, if I can say those words. But anyway, then the last film in that collection is Game Camera, which was my found footage film about four hunters who go up in the woods and they find a game camera these are game cameras they have a motion detector on them. They take pictures of the critters that walk past them. So they find this game camera and look at the footage on it and see a monster on there. And so they decide to go hunting this monster. But then little do they know that they're actually the monsters. They start changing, and you know, the creature they're chasing was other hunters who've transformed too. There's a meteor that crashed near the area, and it's radiating everything.
Interesting.
And that's Monster 101.
That sounds very interesting. Those are all cool sounding things. Now I know there's another
one
that's
one of my favorite things.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to check that one out, or check those out since it's a whole bunch of them. Now the other one that was just released, which is also a collection, Natasha Knighty's Boudoir of Blood, and
right.
Your film, The Road, is in that. So you can just tell us about your film, or, you know, you can tell us, put it together however you want, put it that way.
Okay. It's not my kind of thing, the Natasha Knighty wraparound. It's all sex-based. And I didn't grow up with USA Up All Night, which is a parody of. You know, I'm much older than these guys, so that was something I saw when I was adult, and it never really left an indelible impression on me like it has a lot of other people. But I'm not going to knock any of the work. Everybody did a nice job in it. But my film was made in 2007. I remember because when I started the film, I was married, and when the time it was finished, I was divorced. But my ex-wife appears in it as a photograph. one of the characters whose girlfriend is on his desk. So it's kind of a zombie story, but it's not. It's there's a couple of guys who write as one name, you know, that live here locally, Ben Foxworth and J. Dean Gunther. Anyway, he's going to kill me. I probably said his name wrong. But anyway, they wrote this script and came to me with it, and I thought it was really good. It had a lot of potential. It's about a stretch of road where it makes people crash, and then the ghosts or zombies of those dead people wander the road. for eternity. But they're not zombies in the traditional sense, because they forever look like they did the moment they died. And you'll see in the film that same apparitions keep appearing on different parts of the road. So, you know, there's some kind of magical quality to them too, supernatural quality. But it's this woman who's going to blackmail her partner, ruin her, to take over the business. And she winds up on this road. And, well, I don't know if I'm going too much, but she runs into this guy who's wandering the road, and she doesn't know that he's dead at the time. And he wants to get off the road. He wants to get out of this road. She gets stuck. Anyway, that's the basic gist of it. She finally becomes trapped. Becomes one of them herself, but her car crashes outside of the boundary of the road, so they're now able to leave that road, and they're all wandering toward town at the end of the movie. It's full of special effects. My friend Mitch Tyner, who I work with on everything since I moved to Spokane, he's an amazing artist, and he loves doing this stuff. He did all the makeups in it. I play a guy who's one of maybe like the head of these, we call them the dead ones. My head is almost completely chopped off, so every once in a while it flips back like a Pez dispenser. And in fact, Mitch gave me an action figure of my character in that, and it is a Pez dispenser. It dispenses Pez. it's one of my more ambitious little micro-budget movies. Got a big cast and lots of effects, and I think it came out pretty well. I'm happy with it. It was released before in a thing called Horror Grind Show Double Feature that we did, and it was but it was a very shoddy DVD. It was not very good video quality. This new release is much better.
Oh, good. I'm going to have to check that out, because that's the kind of movies that I like, things like that. So I think I'll like it. Now, excuse me. Now I'm doing that, clearing my throat. You've got two that you're currently working on, and one of them's an animated film. So tell us about that one first, and then we'll go to the other one.
Okay. Well, the guy contacted me out of the blue. He's going to Japan. He wants to make an anthology of micro-budget films, and he gave me a fair amount of money to make this thing with. So, like I said, I just finished the script. We haven't really started working on it yet, but it's my friend Mitch Tyner, the guy, the effects guy. This was a story of his. He also has tons of action figures that he built, and he's especially into medieval period. So this is set in medieval times, and it's about a warrior who leaves his castle to go and rescue his princess who was kidnapped by a baron, another castle, and do I want to give away too much? No, I don't. They both are unusual. They both have some supernatural abilities, and at the end you find out why. But it's going to be done completely stop motion using these action figures. So much more complex than anything I've attempted before in animation. I'm a little nervous about it, but we're going to make it. It's called, at this point I'm calling it Kodrut Keep, is the name of the Baron. Mm. Baron Kodrut. I looked up a bunch of Hungarian names and sent it in Eastern Europe. Kodrut. Kodrut Keep.
Hmm. Well, that sounds interesting. So you're like just started working on that, right?
Yeah, I just finished the script yesterday.
Okay. Well, what about this other one, The Color of Outer Space?
Yeah, that's for John Ward, who's a filmmaker in Oregon who works with Joe Sherlock a lot, to make an anthology of what he calls cosmic horror films, which is, I assume, is Lovecraft-inspired kind of stuff. And so I know this guy. He's a professional stuntman. He's doubled me in a couple of things. And Last time I was out, he has a place called the Mystery Ridge Movie Ranch. And last time I was out there, I saw the spaceship set. There's a cockpit and a corridor. And I asked him, hey, can we shoot something with that? And he was, like, totally cooperative. He even plays one of the roles in it. Norman is a professional movie company in there. It cost him thousands. It really didn't cost me anything. We got some nice production value. We have people flying around on wires for zero gravity, and it's pretty ambitious for a movie that doesn't cost hardly anything, although it's cost me more than I intended to spend. But and we made spacesuits. And the story is these two astronauts who are just gotten out of stasis. They've been asleep for centuries on Earth past. They're going to be trying to find what's at the edge of the universe, what's beyond that. And they pass this barrier, and they see all these weird colors appear and pass through that. One of them covers his eyes, the other one doesn't. The one that didn't cover his eyes, he starts changing into a creature. They have a big, they lose gravity, so they have a big fight while they're floating in the air, you know. I think it'll surprise a lot of people how the production values we have on that thing. It looks like a Hollywood movie.
Wow.
It's just a short film. It's about, it got to be 15 minutes or less for the anthology, so pretty quick.
It sounds cool, though. I like those kind of things. Well, I like sci-fi, and a mixture of the different types of sci-fi, like, you know, sci-fi horror, sci-fi alien, sci-fi mm-hmm. comedy. But yeah, sci-fi is probably my not favorite, but I like it more than the others. Like drama, yep. That's on the low end. Drama's on the low end of what I like.
Well, I watch all kinds of movies. It depends on the quality of the film, who's directing and stuff like that. But I guess if I had to pick a favorite genre, it would be science fiction. I've always wanted to do a cool space movie, just never had the means to before. So when I saw those sets out there, I jumped on it. The title, The Color of Outer Space, is like the first line of the movie. They're pointing in space and goes, what color do you see there? And one of them's like, hey, there's nothing. There's no color at all. The other guy says, no, you see all kinds of colors in there. Anyway, Lovecraft, one of his most famous novels is The Color Out of Space. So I'm trying to, you know, remind people of that, because it's in the Lovecraft themes, you know, and the ending, the big revelation of what's at the end of the universe is pure Lovecraft.
Okay. See, now I have to watch it. So I know, because you just are working on it. I know.
Yeah, it's in post-production right now. Still editing. In fact, we're shooting some stuff tomorrow. We're shooting the spaceship model tomorrow. Then we'll be done.
Well, hopefully it won't be too long before it comes out. Excuse me. We're down to like 6 minutes, so I don't think we'll go over another movie, but we've gone over quite a few, so that's okay. We got all of the new things in. But one thing I wanted you to let the people know, these newer things that are released, you know, like the Monster History 101 and Natasha Knight's Boudoir Blood, and your novel, of course, Hollywood Mortuary, where they can find these things, like to buy or to rent or whatever, or if you have a, your own website where they can go, you know, whatever. Explain that to people.
Okay, well, really, I do have a website, but I haven't updated in years, and I don't sell anything on it. These are both those films, the two that were just released, are now owned by Tony Masiella. It's sovhorror.com. That's where you can buy them. And they're fairly inexpensive, and they're good quality DVDs with lots of extras. In fact, I should say the extras on Monster History 101, there's also another film, another animated film I made for what we call the 50-hour slam here in Spokane. There's a contest every year where you have 50 hours to make a film. And I said, one year I'm going to blow them away. I'm going to do an animated film in 2 days. And I did. It was a parody of It's a Good Life from the Twilight Zone. And cool.
But it's a political statement. It's about Donald Trump, but it's hopefully funny too. and that was my favorite Twilight Zone episode ever. Was It's a Good Life. Is what it's a parody of, the one with that little Anthony who sends people to the cornfield.
Oh yeah,
The novel comes out April 2nd, and it's from Source Point Press in Michigan. I suppose you could order it directly from them, but you know, that hasn't come out yet, so I don't really know. I'm gonna try and get the local bookstores here to carry it and do some book signings. That would be cool. Plus, I make more money.
Yeah, that would. That'd be very cool. It'd also give you of course, having book signings would get people to notice it, and then they pass it on to their friends. Hey, look what I got. I got this book, and then more people buy it. At least I hope that's what happens.
I hope everyone likes it. I think the fans of the movie will dig it.
Well, yeah, I like the movie, so I can't see me not liking it. And I don't expect it to be exactly like the movie, because I never expect that. You can't have a book be the same as a movie. It just doesn't happen. Because books aren't movies. So you can't.
Yeah,
it can't be
the
same. Right. But as long as it's close, then that's fine with me. I'm sure that I'll like it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'll definitely know it's inspired by the movie. It's more than inspired. It follows the same basic plot.
Cool. Okay. So now that we're down to like the last 2 minutes, usually I ask the person to tell people, and I've had a couple of people say, well, I don't want anybody to contact me at all. I mean, so if that's your preference, that can be your preference as well. But I usually have people tell how they want people to contact them, whether it be from Facebook or sending an email or TikTok or, you know, whatever they want people, wherever they want people to contact them. So I'll let you go ahead and tell people.
Well, the easiest way is just on Facebook, Ron Ford on Facebook. If there's more than one Ron Ford comes up, I live in Spokane, Washington. Used to live in L.A., but now I'm in Spokane. That's the easiest way. Tell most people contact me. That's what I would do.
Okay. Well, and that's what a lot of people do nowadays. You know, Facebook, even though you got the naysayers that say, oh, Facebook is that's dying out. Well, I don't see it because I know people that still use Facebook a lot. I'm one of them. I use Facebook a lot, and I know of a lot of other people that do. And when you share stuff on Facebook, it goes all over the world. So,
yeah, I'm not one of the trendy millennials who has to follow the right trends. I won't even deal with TikTok. I don't like Twitter because you can only write just short things, and I don't see a point in it. Facebook's really the only one I do, and it's all about promotion and communication with me. I don't spend hours on it like a lot of people. Look at it
right
times a day, and that's it.
Right. I do a lot of sharing for my friends, for their, you know, whatever it is that they've got going on, and promotion, you know. And that's one of the reasons for this show, is to help people promote their things. So, So there's, I'm getting warned that I have 60 seconds left. So, that's how long we've talked. So if you have anything you want to say in closing, you can go ahead and say it now.
Well, I think we pretty much covered all of it. Thank you very much for having me on your show. It's been a good year for me, and I know 2020 is supposed to be a nightmare, but it's been good to me. I've been a creative period for me, and that it's lots of opportunities keep coming at me.
I'm
not done yet.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, you know, because we need some good news somewhere. You know, not everybody should be having a bad time. So I'm really glad for you, and I mean that sincerely.
I appreciate it.
And I want to thank you for being on the show, and I wish you much success in the future, and especially with your new novel and everything else you have coming out. And thanks again for being on the show. And once again, for the people listening, my guest was Ron Ford, and you can see contact him on Facebook. So thanks, Ron, and have a good night.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.